Way of the Warrior, your MMA show.
10 seconds.
He rolls into it.
Wow, he might get it. Take it.
Way of the Warrior.
One of his legs could fight at welterweight, I'm sure.
Probably.
Roll mount, here's some ground, and pound by O'Gara.
I think the first 2 minutes were everything we thought it was going to be, and then after that, it was the surprise of the night.
If it happens in MMA, you hear about it here. Your MMA show, Way of the Warrior.
It is Way of the Warrior, Eric Hultgren, along with Ken Evans, covering everything in the world of mixed martial arts. Tonight, we will be jumping into UFC on Fox, I believe it was 25, with Weidman saving his career. We will talk about UFC 214, because that's apparently what everyone calls it. I have no idea why. And Jimmy Manuel will stop by and talk about how he was always the bridesmaid this week, not the bride.
Yeah, you think? I mean, you look, I like Jimmy Manuel a lot, and this is a good card up and down, but there is a lot going on this card, a lot of great fights, and it's been kind of a crazy fight week so far. And hey, the good news is you and I actually waited to do the podcast until today because I wanted to make sure that DC weighed in and Jones didn't pop for anything. As of 8 o'clock on Friday night.
Eastern Standard Time.
Eastern Time. Yeah, clarify that. We are a go for a main event tomorrow.
And that is what I mean, because obviously Jimmy Manuwa is on this card as the backup to the backup to the backup. He'll just fight Old Zamir instead of Jones or Cormier because they don't need him there.
I like how you say his name. It almost sounds like Old Zamir, like he's just this guy. Yes. Like he's just thrown in there.
He's Zamir's,
just to keep Manuwa busy.
He's Zamir's dad. He's there to make sure that everyone remembers Zamir, whoever that was. So that will happen. And Jimmy Manuel. Jimmy Manuel,
by the way, is not that old. He's only 27.
No, he's like he's a kid. So
but we don't know how young Zamir is. So he could be very
fair enough.
I'm driving this right into the ground, aren't I?
Yes. I actually, to be honest with you, we might be the only MMA podcast in America that has spent more than 3 minutes talking about Volkan Oldzemir this week. So
there you go.
Congratulations to us.
The UFC intern that has to listen to this thing writes that down for somebody.
Yeah. So, yes, for sure. So I feel like we should start with 214 and work our way backwards to Weidman towards the end of the show because it feels like
that. This is just encompassing everything this week.
Yeah, well,
other than Mayweather-McGregor, which is just laying this giant shadow over everything, which seems kind of insane.
Well, and I have been amazed, not even amazed, just to your point that it's just you can't escape it. Every single interview with every single person. I mean, even Jimmy Manuwa breaks the news, and you'll hear him talk about it here, that he's going to fight in a boxing match in 2018 that Dana White was a part of. And so, like, this whole thing is bleeding over into this entire sport that these guys are now looking for other combat events to jump into. And if you're John Jones, you were asked about two things this week that didn't involve Daniel Cormier. One of them was McGregor Mayweather. The other one was Brock Lesnar.
Brock Lesnar. Oh, boy. Oh, boy. Well, we heard rumors of this, and we talked about it a little bit last week on the show. Like, what are the interesting fights for John Jones if he's able to win here? And obviously, him jumping to heavyweight would be a big deal. We speculated a little bit. We talked a little bit about Brock and what he's got to do to get out of the USADA pool, or maybe into the pool. I don't know the correct verbiage there. Get out of their bad graces and into their good graces, however you want to say that. And one of the things thrown out there was Brock and John. And then he did a Facebook Live for UFC, which, by the way, I linked up immediately on our Facebook page because I thought it'd be a really cool Q&A. Did you watch this, Eric?
This is the only thing I haven't watched this week. So.
Oh, okay. Well, you only need 2 minutes to watch it because he literally walked down a hall. I linked it up like, okay, we got a Q&A with John. And he said, oh, I might fight Brock. Okay, guys, I got to go. And then he left it at that. And then, of course, that explodes. Like, everybody's like, wait, he said he'd fight Brock? Are you kidding me? What's going on here? And then he left it at that in his crazy, like, 1.5 minute Facebook Live. So, of course, there's going to be tons of speculation at this point. What could happen beyond DC if John is able to win?
Well, and what I thought was interesting this week is Luke Thomas has had an interesting week. But in his podcast on Wednesday, prior to the press conference thing that everyone has been enjoying on Twitter, he made an interesting statement that I would like to get your take on, is that there were people in the Q&A. So if you're not somebody who follows Luke Thomas, this is how it works. On Monday, he releases a podcast and a video called The Monday Morning Analyst, where he'll break down what happened the night before. And then on Wednesday, it's essentially a live Q&A. And one of the questions was, hey, Luke, do you think the pay-per-view this weekend does 750,000 buys? And he said, I think it would be a win for the UFC if they did 450.
Yeah, and it's interesting, too, because
And so that's why I think this story has so much weight to it, because, of course, they haven't had a good year. This might be the biggest thing that they've done, overshadowed, of course, by Mayweather-McGregor. And so if you are in the money-making business, you make way less money putting John Jones against Stipe than you do putting John Jones against Brock Lesnar.
Yeah, that all plays into the speculation and how UFC is doing with money and what's going to happen with John Jones if he's able to win, which I still think is a very big if, and we'll get into that quickly. But it's just kind of amazing to see how this week has just been overshadowed. It just doesn't seem like there's enough air in the room for anything but Mayweather-McGregor. And I'm not saying it's a mistake for the UFC to lay this card out, because they had to lay it out when they did. But man, if you could get this thing on the other side of that card, I think you take it right now. You've got championship fights up and down. Now, the Cyborg fight, is that a championship fight or not?
Yes, sir.
Okay, that's what I was wondering. So they're going to give her the title they took from Durandamé, right?
Yes.
By the way, I just saw that fight. She's a terrible woman. She was cheating like crazy. That was a terrible fight. I still can't believe that happened.
Yeah. Yeah.
I finally got to watch it end to end, and I was like, this is insane.
No one will miss her, but yes, the belt that she gave up will go to Cyborg now.
Okay. So, Evans, you're not getting a whole lot of praise from Eric on this show.
We've got
obviously light heavyweight, welterweight, women's featherweight, Lawler Cerrone, which could headline any fight night card. Any FS1 card, maybe even the Big Fox card out there. And obviously, Manoa was on that card because he was the backup in case either DC or Jones couldn't go. Likely Jones couldn't go. DC, if he doesn't make weight, he's going to fight anyways. So you've got this huge card, probably the best of the year in MMA and UFC, and they just can't seem to get any air to get that fire going, because everything is about Mayweather and McGregor, and they haven't done press in 2 weeks, and they're both in their camps, and there's a little bit of back and forth on Twitter. But I mean, other than that, that's all they're actually doing to promote the fight. It's just that the interest level is so high and overwhelming that it's just sucking the air out of the room. And anytime these fighters go anywhere, if you're SportsCenter, or if you're middle of the road America sports talk show that gets these MMA interviews lined up, the first thing you're asking these dudes is about McGregor and Mayweather, because that's what all of your audience wants to know about at this point.
Which, of course, makes it very hard to sell a pay-per-view. And all to my point that when we get past this, look, if Conor wins and they can get him on a card before the end of the year, it will obviously sell itself, because he will be the biggest athlete in America, maybe the planet at that point.
Even if he loses, this is going to sell itself. Conor back in the octagon, that kind of deal.
Yes, but my point is there's a big if that happens before the end of the year, because everyone's saying that they want him before the end of the year, but he's one of these guys who has written his own ticket in the UFC, and so you don't know. And then you've got all sorts of weird things that I don't necessarily want to get into today, but you've got the rest of the lightweight division is doing itself no favors, because you have Ferguson on Twitter this week saying that Nurmagomedov turned him down, and so the fights that you want to see aren't coming to fruition. And my point in saying that is that things like Conor coming back and things like Jones and Brock, they actually need to save their year, because it has not been a very kind year to the UFC monetarily.
Oh, no, not at all. And especially, I mean, again, we've talked about this before on the show. I mean, the genius of the Fertitta brothers, they got out when the getting was good and sold that thing, and it has not been the same since they've sold it. And it's not necessarily any doing of the business or what they had to do with the business beforehand. It was just a natural fall you're going to see after superstars like John and Ronda and McGregor do the things they did for the past couple of years, and before that GSP and Anderson Silva. So they kind of took a look at the landscape and said, maybe now's the time to get out. Let's sell this thing after a McGregor pay-per-view. Now, obviously, nobody knew McGregor was going to kind of roll into this weird situation where he's holding up belts in multiple divisions. And yes, I get it. They already took one and awarded it, but that division is now under Conor's shadow. Obviously, his belt that he's got at
55.
Which one did he keep? 55. The lightweight belt, which he still has. Obviously, that division's being held up. You talked about Nurmagomedov. You talked about Tony Ferguson. And it's all held up because of this card that's happening in a couple of weeks here, August 26th. that couldn't be foreseen. So I get that. But everything else you had to know other than Connor, boy, I'm not sure if we're going to get a lot of mileage out of Ronda Rousey. Remember, she hadn't made her comeback yet, but she did not look good in that loss to Holm and mentally was showing a lot of red flags. So John Jones was suspended at that point. He was just suspended, but, you know, there were some appeals. But, you know, the Fertittas, I think, saw some of this writing on the wall, and they've been looking for a long time to get in the NFL business, is what the rumor is. And to do that, they needed a lot of capital, and they cashed in when they could. That all being said, I bring that up because they have not made a lot of money since those dudes left, and WME IMG paid $4 billion for that company. Yeah. That's a lot of money to pay for a company. You know, that's essentially, if you talk in terms of cash flow, and I'm an expert because I watch a lot of Shark Tank, you've got to...
That is how you get a master's in cash flow,
right, exactly,
is that show.
Exactly. So $4 billion means the UFC needs to be making $400 million a year, right?
Yeah.
Your cash flow is 10 times your yearly profit, right?
Yes.
Or your value, I should say.
Yes, correct.
So they need to make $400 million this year. I don't know how much they've made. Doesn't feel like a $400 million year at this point for the UFC.
No, which brings us right back to UFC 214, or apparently, as everyone else in our industry is calling it, 214. Doesn't matter. It brings us right back to this thing, which on paper, as you said, looks incredible. However, one of the reasons that I think some people are pumping the brakes is what you said 10 minutes ago, is we waited till 8 o'clock on a Friday night to do this because it's the fifth time we've tried to do this.
Is it five?
Five. This is the fifth time we've tried to do this.
Wow. We only got one out of five so far.
Right.
Okay.
So when you have that at the top of the card and you come off of what happened with Nunez, I think it's fresh in your mind. Like, I think on Twitter, I don't remember if you did that Wednesday or Tuesday, but they were asking for pre-orders. And you're like, bro, I'm going to watch the thing, but you got to be kidding me.
Yeah, I to UFC directly. Yes. I said, look, this is a, I know there's some guy in the social media department. He has to put those posts up, you know, his little mean gene of the situation. Don't be left out. Pre-order now.
Right.
Ain't nobody pre-ordering no DC John Jones fight. I'm coming to your place to watch it, Eric. I don't mind if you want to wait until Robbie and Donald are in the ring. Let's wait till Lawler and Cerrone get in there. Nothing has actually happened. I'll get it at that point before you shell out your dollars. Nobody's pre-ordering this thing. They have gotten to the main event at this point. I mean, I don't think we've ever seen anybody pulled day of for drugs, right? I don't think day
Wasn't
of.
Wasn't he pulled on that Friday night? When was he?
He was pulled on Wednesday or Thursday because they were still able to get Anderson in there.
Oh, God. Yeah. Okay, got
and
it.
They can't. We learned from the situation with Nunez, they can't turn around a same-day fight because Joanna Jędrzejczyk tried to get in against Shevchenko in that fight.
The difference with this one is Manoa has been notified he is the backup, so they have one if something were to happen.
Right.
Between...
But I was saying for Silva to get in there last
Correct.
Year.
Yeah.
We know that he couldn't have done it day of, so... Our memories aside, we know that couldn't have mechanically happened the way that the tests work with last year's card. So it was a couple days out. I think we've got a main event, but hell, wasn't it just UFC 213 where he lost the main event the morning of?
Yes, but I want to make one quick asterisk to what you just said. The reason that the Nunez fight didn't happen is because there's something that they get tested for that men don't, and that's the pregnancy test that they couldn't turn around. That was what
is that
what,
it
yes that was what held it up.
Oh,
so
did you just assume Anderson Silva's gender? Can't do that now, man. You're gonna get in trouble.
Sorry. My apologies to the Anderson Silva family, whatever that means. But let's get into the fight, okay? It's Daniel Cormier. It's John Jones. It's John Jones' first rematch. It's his first time back in quite a long time. We'll call it a year, 18 months total since the OSP fight.
It's been April.
Yeah.
April of last year.
Yeah, so 18 months since the last time
12,
he was in the 13, octagon.
15.
Against OSP. And, you know, if you've been watching everything this week, there's plenty of out there to dissect. There's the interesting point of view from Dan Hardy that he thought John Jones was playing possum in the OSP fight just to kind of get through it and have some stuff saved up for DC. But I don't know that his plan was to save that up for 15 months.
Yeah, where did I saw, I don't know if it was John himself talking about it or somebody talking about, they were trying to make the case for Jones, and maybe it was Deadspin. They talked about him demolishing OSP. I'm like, did you watch the fight I watched? because he did not demolish OSP by any means.
No,
he won that fight pretty handily, yep. But he looked nothing like the John Jones you would usually expect to see in the cage.
Now, when you rewind the clock to 2 years ago, when this first fight actually happened between Daniel Cormier and John Jones, what's interesting is we all remember it much closer than the scores had it, because DC won a single round. With two of the judges, he won round three. With one of the judges, he won round two. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
So all things being equal, I don't get the sense that unless so much has changed dramatically between these two men, that much will be different from DC, unless he just has more in the tank to put out more volume when he gets in exchanges with John Jones, because he clearly tired out towards the end of that when John ran away with the fight.
Well, the interesting part of this is obviously the thing we talked about last year at about this time, is that John Jones is now facing somebody for the second time. And, you know, I don't want to beat it into the ground, because we have touched upon it quite a few times on the podcast. But for those who haven't heard this before, there's going to be a real issue possibly for John Jones dealing with somebody who knows how strong he is, because he seems to surprise everybody with his strength. Chael Sonnen said that. Everybody who's been in the cage is like, I never realized how strong he is. DC knows how strong John is and knows what he has to do to combat that strength. Whether or not he can execute, going to come down to training, going to come down to what he's done in the past couple years, the fact that he's been active, John hasn't, all of those things. The other part of this that's very interesting is this seemed to be the easiest cut from everything we've heard that DC has had in a long time. I mean, how many times have we seen the embedded videos, or obviously the last fight with DC against Rumble where he's holding the towel,
right,
and
right,
all these other things where he's just like dying on the ground and in some casino back room and he's trying to just cut. I mean, you've seen the terrible weight cut videos, it seems like, every time with DC. There's always been something. And I remember Tuesday of this week, his camp is saying, yeah, DC's on track, don't worry about it. Okay. Camp's going to always say that. He walked in today. He looked as good as I think I've ever seen DC at a weigh-in. I haven't seen what do they call them? The weigh-ins that aren't the weigh-ins?
Ceremonial weigh-ins, I think is what they're calling them.
Ceremony. I haven't seen that.
It's happening right now as we're doing it. So
as we're podcasting, it's happening. I can only imagine he's looking better at this point because he's had time to rehydrate. He looked really, really good this morning. Really, really good. Now, John looked amazing as well.
Yes.
So you don't want to take too much from a weigh-in, but you can say, hey, most of the times you see DC at a weigh-in, he looks like he's about to die. And this morning, he didn't look like he was about to die.
Right.
So chalk that one up over in the DC column, and let's see what happens tomorrow night.
So you and I have been going back and forth on Twitter most of the week. And for obviously people who don't know us as well as we know each other, like, there's no animosity between the two of us.
Didn't think there was in general in that. I don't know what you're talking about.
No, but I think sometimes people see you and I go back and forth. They're like, those guys like each other? That's the strangest thing ever. But
well, not on Twitter.
Right.
We don't like each other.
No, we hate each other on Twitter, which is why we do that stuff. But is DC your pick? Is that what we're going with?
I think at this point, I'm going to go with DC as my pick.
Okay.
Because obviously he's a lot older, but the fact is he's been active. He's been active, and we saw what happened to John Jones last time he was out of the cage for any amount of time. This time it's even longer. We're working on 15 months. DC, I believe, knows what he's getting in there against. If he's able to nullify any of John's takedowns, which sounds kind of strange, but yeah, let's go back to that fight. I watched it earlier this week.
He was 3 of 5.
Right, exactly. If you're watching this as a neophyte and you walk right in, who's the wrestler? Oh, the guy that keeps taking him down. But I think DC has got a lot of experience. I think he's been in there before with guys. He's been in there obviously with John before, so he kind of knows a little better what he's getting into. I really think DC's got the championship advantage in this fight, and the fact that he's been active so long. I mean, it's interesting too, because he made that comment earlier this week. That caused everybody to get all a fluffle, I guess I could say, or a flutter.
Yes.
Where he said if he beats John, he should be considered one of the best of all time, and everybody kind of laughs. And then you actually go start looking at all the people he beat and what he's been able to do in his career, like Josh Barnett, like Roy Nelson, like Frank Mir, Dan Henderson. Obviously, he beat Rumble twice. It's hard to beat anybody twice. He beat Gus. Yes, he beat Silva. I know that was a weird-ass fight, and some people think he didn't – you know, do what he needed to do in there. But he went in against the guy like on a day's notice and beat who up until that time, other than John Jones, was considered one of the best fighters on the planet. So did all of that, obviously won the Grand Prix in Strikeforce.
As an alternate, friends, which means they called him like on a Tuesday and said, hey, we need you back in the tournament.
Well, I was just remembering watching that thing and Barnett was obviously in that. You had
Karatanov was
Fedor
in there.
Who went in there. Yeah,
I love Karatanov.
That's not helping me with
my
point.
Love Karatanov.
Bigfoot was in there, I believe. Wasn't Monson in that thing too? Because Monson was the other reserve, and they thought Monson was going to be their reserve guy. So, I mean, not that Jeff Monson's a big feather in the cap, but he was the other reserve dude. So nobody knew who DC was walking into this. I mean, other than a challengers fight and I think some King of the Cage, he really hadn't been featured in a lot of things. And then, you know, obviously he was undefeated up until John. And at that point, you know, he took his first loss, which is still his only loss.
Okay, here's your context. It was Fedor, Silva, Overeem, Verdum, Arlovsky, Karatanov, Barnett, and Rogers. And DC came in as an alternate.
Oh, that's right. Brett Rogers. I forgot about him.
DC comes in as an alternate and beats Josh Barnett to win the Grand Prix.
Right. Well, then that's also after beating Frank Mir, right? Or no,
no,
I'm sorry.
Silva.
Frank Mir came later.
Yeah, he beat Silva.
Silva's who I'm thinking of. Bigfoot, right?
Yep.
So, yeah, I mean, that's some insanity right there when you really look at his record. So, you know, I don't know if I'm going to jump on one of the greatest fighters in the planet kind of deals. But, I mean, if he beats John Jones, I certainly think you can start talking about it. And think about a guy who was at heavyweight and made all that noise there and then went to light heavyweight and has made a lot of noise since doing that as well.
Yeah, it will be interesting. I just don't have the same... There's just something about Jones that it makes it hard for me to pick against him. And I know on Twitter I had a lot of people who were like, he's a cheater and a terrible person, and how can you root for him, and blah, 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 blah. And to them, you know, I appreciate your point of view. I don't necessarily watch the sport for role models. I watch the sport to watch athletes travail against each other. And I just tend to think that John Jones is the better athlete all around. And when you go back and look at that original fight, if he's able to continue to keep range, I don't think that DC has an answer for him. Now, if DC has a lot more in the gas tank than he did the last time around, Ken, and DC can get inside and stay inside, that's a different conversation. But every single time that fight resets and there's distance, that's Jones' game all day long.
Oh, for sure. It's going to be about the range, because if Jones can stay in his range, that's the one thing that, you know, DC's obviously got going against him, being a light heavyweight who's only 5'10". That's not very tall in that division in general, especially against a guy like John Jones. So it's going to be interesting to see who can keep range. You know, if Jones is clunky, though, like he was in that OSP fight, I just think DC's got his number. I think DC is just, I know he's 38 years old, and I know we're going to see one of these fights in, you know, very soon with DC where he just falls off the map, like always happens. I just don't think we're there right now. I think all DC's been thinking about for the past 3-4 years is getting in there with John Jones on whatever level he can. So it's going to be very interesting to see what happens on Saturday night. I mean, John Jones, man, one of the best ever. He's undefeated, essentially. I mean, I know you got the one on that one side with that bad stoppage or DQ or whatever it was. I forget what it was.
It was a DQ to Hamill, yeah, with elbows.
Right, the elbows that weren't actually illegal,
yes,
though.
Right, yeah.
So, yeah, they weren't Kevin Lee elbows. There, let's
right.
just say that.
Yes, they were not those. They were not those.
So, I mean, this is everything the UFC could ask for. It really is at this point. And it's just kind of interesting to see how the air has been sucked out of the room this week with Mayweather and McGregor. And you know what? I give as much credit as I can to Dana White. He timed everything as well as he could, you know, negotiating Mayweather McGregor. And, hey, we're going to do this promo tour. I need this a couple weeks out of my other pay-per-view. All of those type of things, because obviously you can't have these guys. They couldn't have done press next week. Just because of the way camps work, that's not going to happen,
yep.
especially two continents, because somebody's, you know, obviously McGregor's over in Ireland and then Mayweather's in Vegas. So that wasn't going to happen at all after this week. So Dana seemed to be able to get as much time as he could. But man, that's just a big, big, tall shadow that they're trying to get out from under. And it doesn't seem like they've been able to this week. So 450,000, I think, is low. but I don't think this is going to get close to a million, which I think it would have a year ago.
And I agree with all those things. I just think they've had a bad year. This is the best thing that they have going right now. But at the top of the card, for anyone who's been paying attention, like I said, we've tried this five times. Now, as we're talking and getting closer, it's obviously it's pretty much a lock. I'm knocking on wood as we speak, but as close as we've ever gotten to having this sequel actually happen. The co-main event, it's Tyron Woodley and Damian Maya. And if you are on the internet, you would wonder why Maya would even want to show up for this fight.
That's a fad. I'm not on there.
You know, but because this is clearly a Styles makes fight sort of thing. You've got Woodley, who is going to stand in the middle and either try and out wrestle or knock Maya out. And Damian Maya, who has looked absolutely spectacular at welterweight since his move back down there.
My favorite thing this week was Tyron Woodley was on one of the UFC Fox shows. And, you know, the funny thing is, for a champion on a card like this, even he's kind of been getting ignored here and there because of how top heavy the card is with DC and John Jones. So the funny thing, they asked him on the show, I think it was Biz being asked him, said, so what are you going to do against a guy who's one of the most decorated jiu-jitsu guys in UFC? He's on a run, blah, 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 Brazilian jiu-jitsu, BJJ, all the buzzwords 10 times. Tyrone looked at him and says, I'm going to take him down and sub him. That's the perfect attitude to have in this fight. He can be as loose as he wants to be because he's not carrying the pay-per-view. He's against a guy where, you know what, nobody's giving him a shot in the world at subbing him. So like you said, got to take him down, ground and pound him, use his striking. I think Tyron's in a good place for this fight, but Damian Maya, we've talked about it over and over and over again. I mean, we've been plugging him in for a title shot for, what, the last year or so, Eric?
Yeah.
Because he's been for real for the last year.
Seven wins in a row, if you're not paying attention.
And it took him a long time to get there, too, because, you know, we went back to, obviously, what was it? Dance for Me, Playboy. What was that? Silva said to him in Abu Dhabi.
Yep. UFC,
I forget what that was.
UFC 112 on April 10th of 2010.
And he, you know, obviously he caught a couple of losses here and there and then was kind of forgotten about it. I was honestly surprised he didn't get cut after that Rory loss, because at that point it didn't really look like he was going to do anything. And boy, it's a good thing they didn't, because that's when he just ripped off the seven in a row. A couple of big stars in there too, including Carlos Condit, the Gunnar Nelson fight. That was a tough fight he got out of in a decision.
Well, and the way he just ate Matt Brown apart right now. Matt Brown, like, he's not Tyron Woodley, I get that, but this is a guy, friends, that you know, again, if you listen to anybody who's done deconstruction of this fight, the thing that Damian Maya is brilliant at is getting people's back. And if you go to Wikipedia, you see a lot of RNCs or rear naked chokes, because that's his preferred place to be, is on somebody's back, and he knows it better than anybody. And so this is a guy who's spent his entire career figuring out ways to get into that position. And if you study Brazilian jiu-jitsu or you play around with Brazilian jiu-jitsu, you usually find a thing that you're good at. And when you find that thing that you're good at, you have to learn other moves, because when you roll against people, they will eventually figure out that you're good at whatever, taking the back. So you've got to figure out other ways to sneak them in so that you can jump on their back and choke them out. And that's what Damian Maya has been doing masterfully at 170 with this 7-fight win streak. Because even Jorge Masvidal, who looked like he at least had studied enough tape to figure out a way to contend with Damian Maya, still wasn't able to do that.
Well, that's been his thing, is he's taking these submissions and he's just locking them in. Rear naked choke, rear naked choke, rear naked choke. So, you know, for Tyron Woodley, he's got to avoid that. And that's the key to this fight. So it's going to be a fun one. I'm really into Tyron Woodley at this point. I really want to see him maybe get that big money fight down the line at some point, maybe GSP, maybe somebody else. But he's going to have to get through a real tough guy to get to a money fight at this point. And this is no joke at this point in the UFC. And when you're a champion, that's more and more what it's become in the UFC, is you've got to beat those top tier guys every time. And this is going to be a big test as we see Tyron Woodley in there, and it should be a lot of fun. I just like this week watching him. He's been as loose as I've seen him, and I really think it's that spot on the card. Is he's not at the top of the card. He doesn't have to worry about those things at the top of the card or carrying the promotion at this point. So there you go.
And if you missed the announcement, Dana White did in fact say that the winner of this, which is so weird because it feels like even though the champion might win and keep his belt, there's like a championship above the championship. But it was announced that the winner of this fight will get George St. Pierre next.
So George St. Pierre gets the next title shot.
No, that's not what they said. They said exactly what I said. The winner of this fight gets George St. Pierre as if he's a title above the title.
Dana's got a lot going on. I feel like there's a lot of corporate pressure. There's this whole Zuffa boxing thing he's trying to put together. Obviously, the Mayweather-McGregor stuff has got to him. That's a very strange way to say that.
It is. In retrospect, it's actually that the winner gets George St. Pierre next. George is the number one contender de facto at this point. So I think, you know,
that's hilarious.
Yeah.
I hope his belt has like, remember when Lance Storm won the United States title in WCW
and
back
he had his
in
own
the day?
Canadian belt.
And then he put a Canadian flag on there. I hope like George has one of his UFC belts like at his house hanging above the La Fleur de Bleu, whatever that is.
Yes.
Oh, God, I'm going to really piss off our Canadian listeners because I don't know what that's called. But I hope he's got that, and it's just redone in that Montreal flag design, and he wears that out whenever he decides to finally come back and fight.
Ryan Dempsey will correct my pronunciation, but I believe it's the Fleur de Lis. But that is what you're looking for.
Okay.
And then,
they have great strip clubs, I'm told, so that's good.
Okay, you're not
Viva helping. La Montreal.
You are not helping. But the third fight on the card, as we talked about at the top of the show, it's Cyborg and Tonya Evinger, both Invicta champions, both going for the women's featherweight belt at 145 pounds. Evinger, the current champ at Invicta at 135. She actually vacated that belt to take this fight. And if you've not seen her fight, totally understandable. She is into the dirty boxing. She likes to grind it out. She likes to get mixed up. Think about, I think the best way to compare her would be the female version of Robbie Lawler. So from a fight perspective, this is about as good as you can get against Cyborg to make it competitive.
Well, this is set up to be a showcase for Cyborg. That's what this is set up for. I'm not saying it's a gimme by any means, but you're going to have somebody who goes out there, wants to strike, wants to get inside, wants to fight, essentially.
Yep.
And that's what you want when you have this weird situation where I get it. It's not going to seem like it's a fake belt by any means, but you are awarding a belt you just took away from somebody to someone. So you want her to seem very legit as she goes out there. It's going to be really interesting to see how this fight plays out. I mean, again, Cyborg really hasn't been tested in a big fight in the UFC at this point. So it's going to be interesting to kind of see if she can walk the walk and talk the talk and all, vice versa and all of the cliches. Because, yeah, we've been hearing about Cyborg now for years and years and years. And for a long time, I didn't care at all because she didn't want to make the weight and she kept calling out Ronda Rousey. Whatever you want to say about Rousey now, I'm not one of those people that's going to dump on her just because she lost. She certainly got her flaws. There were certainly things there, but she was the champ at that point, and I saw no reason for her to have to do a catchweight fight with somebody else. So, you know, there was a lot of Cyborg fatigue on my part, which Eric can attest to for those of you that didn't follow week to week.
Oh, yeah. I mean, but if we made a supercut, you would have probably said make the weight 125,000 times.
Oh, I can't even imagine how many times I said it. And then I mean, even when she said she was going to make the weight, she ended up doing two catchweight fights. So that was kind of annoying with her only fights in the UFC. Now she only has to make 145. So hopefully everything's okay there. Well, she made the weight, we know, earlier this morning.
And she looked great. So
yeah, she looked pretty good there. So it'll be interesting. And I know she's headlined fight nights before. I just feel like the pay-per-view and for this title, this is a little bit of a bigger event at this point. So it's going to be kind of interesting to see if there's any issues with handling the pressure and being in that situation. Obviously, she's a vet. She's been fighting a long time. I mean, how many people in the UFC have been fighting professionally for 12 years at this point?
Well,
not a lot.
The only two I think that you can put on that list are fighting right below her, because Robbie Lawler and Donald Cerrone have 80 fights between the two of them.
Maybe. Yeah. But I mean, that's insane, though. She's been fighting.
Yeah.
And obviously, you know, the Brazilians, they get to do that early.
Yes.
That's
yes,
just
do.
In the so, culture.
No,
it's not just
it.
Cultural.
Yeah.
That's how they roll. Get it? Roll.
Yes, I get it. All that to be said, I think this could be a very exciting fight, because if Evinger can keep up the pressure, she will do exactly what you said, Ken. She'll be able to stand in the pocket and throw with Cyborg and see who is the better fighter, because from what you can catch from Evinger in her career, she's not somebody who is scared of Cyborg, at least at this point, and she's not somebody that doesn't like to get hit, very much like Robbie Lawler. So you might finally get somebody who's going to stand in there and make Cyborg make the fight stop, if you catch my meaning, as opposed to running and trying to get away from Cyborg and get out of the octagon, which is tending to be what happens when people fight Cyborg.
Which would have been exactly what Durandamy did.
Yes. Well, she did. Even though, she actually threw the belt and ran away.
She threw it at Dana White's head and then ran off.
Yes.
It's like they say, if you're mugged, you should take your money, throw it on the ground, and just run away and get out of the situation. Because they just want your money. She like, I'm going to throw my belt on the ground and run the other way.
I'm out of here.
I'm going to run out of here. So you know what she did, too, right after the fight? Because, again, I didn't get to watch it all the way until, I think, last night they replayed it. After the fight, she's like, yeah, I'll fight Cyborg. I'm like, you bitch. You totally lied. And I get it. Everybody lies all the time. But she's like lying. Yeah, I'll fight Cyborg if that's what the champ is. I'll put so-and-so in front of me. Then she literally threw the belt down and ran away. I'm like, come on.
Yep. She had the adrenaline dump, came back down to earth and went, well, that's a stupid idea. Here's my belt. I quit.
Right. Right. She's like, do I get to use pocket sand? I don't. Well, I'm not fighting. Pocket sand. Ah! Then she runs off.
All right, continuing on in the card.
I was so mad at her last night, watching the fight, knowing she's going to win, seeing her cheat like hell, and then, like, after the fight, I'll fight Cyborg. I'm like, you didn't even win this fight, and you're lying now. And you're not lying like Floyd's going to take 4-ounce gloves or Connor's going to bet his paycheck line. We knew those were lies. We trusted you. God, now I realize why everybody's so mad at her.
Yeah, that's what's funny. It's like 5 weeks ago when this happens and I'm on fire and you're just staring at me because you don't understand why I'm so angry.
Well, I wasn't going to buy that card. You knew that. Come on.
No, I just mean when she decides to throw her belt away and not do this anymore and you're like, yeah, I don't know why you're so angry. It's fun that you're on the team now. Welcome aboard.
Oh, man, is she even still working there?
I have no idea. Why they didn't cut her, I have no idea. All right, welterweight bout, Robbie Lawler, Donald Cerrone, fan favorite title, I believe, is what's on the line here because you cannot get a better, more exciting fight on a card than these two, which is why they wanted to do it so fast after Cerrone was injured, right? Not sick. He was injured in 13, right?
Yeah. And the fun thing about this, too, is like the opposite. And I know it doesn't generate a lot of buys. But I mean, when you kind of have those guys at the top doing the work they're doing, it's kind of cool to see these two guys. They're really chill with each other and all the stuff this week in the press. You know, they haven't had to deal with a lot of questions like everybody else on this card. And I remember I saw them at the media day when Dane is like just throwing himself in between DC and John Jones because he just doesn't want the fight to get screwed up before it actually happens. Robbie and Donald are like standing next to each other. You would think they were on the same fight team.
Right.
Because they're just talking to each other and hanging out. And they're fighting each other. So it's kind of cool to see the sportsmanship side of things on occasion, especially in a week like we've seen and coming off the tail end of everything we saw with Mayweather and McGregor.
Yeah, and in a very exciting fight. And one that is, it's hard for me to call this one. This is actually the hardest one in the card for me to call. Although my gut says Lawler in this one.
Oh, I thought you were going to talk about the Manoa fight.
No,
the Manoa
one's an easy one. Lawler and Cerrone is a very difficult one, I think, to call.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, it'll be really interesting to see who wins this fight. You know, we're talking about the welterweight division and what's going to be happening there. And, you know, it's not, I mean, either of these guys winning could conceivably be a guy you'd want to talk about in the title picture, but we know that the GSP title will be on the line.
Yeah.
So
yes.
In the future for whoever wins. So does this guy get the loser of that fight? I mean, I don't think that's fair to whoever wins. So it'll be kind of interesting to see here.
You mean like would we end up seeing Robbie Lawler and Damian Maia? Is that like what you're talking about?
Yeah, something like, I'm not sure. Or maybe even Cerrone's coming off a loss. So I think him and a guy who comes off a loss.
Yeah.
He would be coming off a win if he wins here. But
right. I get what you're saying.
Masvidal. Yeah. So that would be kind of an interesting setup there. If Donald Cerrone wins, to put him in there with Damian Maia at that point. Robbie Lawler, if he wins, you know, you'd have to imagine he wants back in that title picture at this point. And
now,
you know,
when you're talking about title picture, which picture does he want to be a part of? The Woodley title or the GSP title?
Well, I think he wants to go back. He wants a rematch against Woodley, I think.
I'm of course kidding.
Are you joking? Okay, I'm sorry.
There's only one. Only one welterweight belt, but yes, I would imagine he would want the rematch if he could get it.
Well, here's the interesting thing, and this is another level of something we're going to have to probably pay a little more attention to, because I'm not just now thinking of it, but I'm realizing I don't have the information I wish I had. We need to start figuring out how many fights these guys have left on deals, especially in the welterweight division, which is building up very quickly in Bellator.
Yep.
And if you start seeing guys like GSP and Woodley at the top, by no means do I want to say holding up the title, because that's not fair. McGregor's holding up a title. You know, Woodley would not be holding up a title, but if you're in the UFC, and let's say you're Robbie Lawler, and you take another loss, so you'll have back-to-back losses, and all of a sudden you realize, hey, I'm 3 or 4 fights away from a title at this point. Are you going to do that, or maybe go over to Bellator to see where you can stack up? Because if you go to Bellator and win a couple of fights, you're in that champ. Well, if you win a couple of fights, you're probably a champion, because the way Bellator is setting things up. So you have a real option there, especially in this welterweight division, which I think is one of the most interesting in Bellator. We're going to have to start figuring out how many fights these guys have left in UFC, because there is a very real possibility of going over to Bellator and fighting for a legit championship. I mean, you saw a guy in the Gegard Mousasi. You saw him jump to Bellator when he didn't have fights left. And basically, there's guys that were lined up that wanted to fight him, and he's gone now. And
yeah,
that's just a really interesting dynamic that we're going to have to start taking into consideration when we look at these fights and start putting things together, like who wins, who loses, what happens if Lawler loses. Lawler loses before, and you're like, oh, man, he's going to be on all these fight night cards, and he's going to be on Fight Pass. And, you know, he's a great fighter, and he had some big wins. But, yeah, he's probably relegated to the mid card. Guy can go probably headline on a Bellator card. That's a nice option for some of those guys to have. And I think it's a good option for the fighters to be able to have at this point, especially seeing how business is going with the UFC and elsewhere.
And don't forget that Lawler and Coker obviously have history, because Lawler was over there at one point prior to coming back to the UFC.
Exactly.
For your edification, Cerrone signed an 8-fight deal in April of last year. So he's likely got a couple, 5 probably left on his contract at this point. So it might be Lawler that we're talking about, but Cerrone's probably locked up for at least another year and a half.
Yeah, I mean, it's just kind of interesting, too, because, and again, obviously the Gerard Mousasi thing is a big deal, because, you know, the guy who just tried to put himself in line for a title shot, you know, he just beat Weidman. Mousasi did, right?
Yes.
That was his last win. So, I mean, obviously he's got that win. And usually guys who are on 4 or 5 fight win streaks in the UFC don't jump ship. So there's always that first guy that's going to do something like that. That makes you look at things and go, wonder what their contracts look like. Wonder what kind of sponsorships Bellator is doing. Wonder what made this so much more attractive than being in the title picture in the UFC. I don't think anybody would have argued with the fact that he was in the title picture in the UFC at this point, and he still decided to go to Bellator. So that's a really interesting bellwether of things to come.
Yeah, but I think you've talked about this a couple times on the show, what a mess it is at 185, and certainly becoming a mess at 170 with this GSP title that all of a sudden pops up. You know, if you're a guy that's 4th or 5th or even 3rd, and you're like, well, I don't want to wait 2 years before I get a title shot, and I've got to eat, so I got to fight guys like Yoel Romero on repeat before I get a title shot. Forget it.
And it's not even for the title.
Right,
yeah, exactly.
Forget it. I'm not going to do that. I'm going to move.
And Gegard, let's remember, Gegard made this move in the middle of that whole when the hell is Bisping even going to fight thing.
Yes.
And then obviously you've got GSP, who was supposed to, remember, come up to fight.
Yep.
So just to give some context more to your situation where this is kind of a mess and I don't know what's happening. Remember, GSP was in that title picture for the longest time at 185 and kind of holding things up because of the Bisping fight that he wanted to have sometime later this year.
And the kickoff to the main card is Jimmy Manoa and Volkan Oldzemir. Volkan, 2 wins over top 10 opponents, but takes a huge jump up in talent, I think, with Jimmy Manoa, who, as I said, was the backup for either John Jones or Daniel Cormier, assuming one of them couldn't make it to the finish line this week. Jimmy Manoa on the phone right now. We will talk to him right now. Jimmy, how are you?
Hey, guys. How you doing?
We are amazing. How are you doing?
I'm good, man. I'm really good. I'm just counting down the days to doing work on Saturday.
Yeah, and obviously an exciting fight with you and Volkan Oezdemir kicking off the main card. You have talked about this all week, so I won't belabor the point because I know that you probably answered this question 30 times in the last hour. But clearly you're in an interesting position, meaning they put you on this card as kind of a backup plan if Jones or Cormier can't make it. But for people who don't know who Volkan is, like, this guy is the real, seemingly the real deal, and a guy that you need to stay focused on, correct?
Yeah. He's come into the UFC, beat two top 10 opponents, and he's had a fast rise into the UFC. And now he's comes from a K-1 background, a kickboxing background. And, you know, he's facing me.
And so, Jimmy, the question I really wanted to ask you, and you alluded to it earlier today in an earlier interview, is this... glass ceiling is the wrong term, but there's clearly a level jump from where he was and who he was fighting in the UFC to guys like you and Gus and certainly Rumble when he was there and Cormier and Jones, correct?
Yeah.
I mean, 100%. Like, you know, when you listen to Dan Hardy talk about the Corey Anderson fight, there's a very specific thing that he says, which I went back and watched the fight a couple times, and it doesn't even look like you punch Corey Anderson and it's lights out. And so when I ask you this question, it feels to me like, yeah, you've got a K-1 kickboxing background, but when you face a guy like Jimmy Manoah, a guy who encapsulates the phrase one shot, one kill, and you watch that Corey Anderson fight, it feels like you might not be ready for what's going to happen on Saturday. And I just wanted to get kind of your perspective being in the UFC for as long as you've been in it, kind of welcoming this newcomer who wants to claim to be the fastest light heavyweight champion in history, what that derailment might feel like for him.
You know what? That's for him and his team to work out. You know, I'm just here to do my job. And you know what? I'm 100% focused because light heavyweights, they hit hard. Everyone hits hard, and he comes from a striking background. So I'm taking him very seriously, and that because I've got to be very careful in this fight because he is a big guy and he has trained and he has got skills. And that, so I'm not looking down on him at all. You know, I'm taking this like I'm fighting for the title. You know, I've trained very hard. This camp has not been easy. Everyone in my team's taking him very seriously, and that. So, but to me, I've put in the work in the UFC. You know, I've had wins, but I've had two losses, and everything. I've learned a lot and everything. So I'm going to show him there's levels. There's levels to this year. It's up to me to show him there's levels to this game, you know, and that's what I'm fully focused on, shining levels, and I can't wait to put him on his ass.
UFC 214 this weekend. Jimmy Manoah is joining us, taking on Volkan Oezdemir. Question for you about where the fight takes place. One of the most interesting things for me about the sport of mixed martial arts is when you go from state to state, the rules are just slightly different. And one of the stories coming out of this card, obviously, is that Henan Barao was not going to be licensed at 135 because of a bad weight cut he had previously. And I'm not asking you to speak on Henan Barao's situation per se, but as a fighter, is it difficult to know that, like, when you go to Texas, it's different than Las Vegas, and when you go to California, it's different than Detroit, and when you fight in London, it's different than... Is that hard to level set, or is that just something you don't think about because you just kind of stay within the parameters of what you think the rules are and hope that you stay legal in the octagon?
That's exactly how I do it. I don't really care as long as I fight. I swear, as long as I can fight and everything, I don't come in too heavy, I don't come in too light and everything, as long as I'm within the rules and everything, and I don't even like look too much into the rules and stuff. I didn't even know there was a different they told me about the different weight thing yesterday when I got here, but I was bang on weight and everything else. I don't come in too heavy and stuff like that, and it doesn't really bother me now.
Absolutely. Jimmy Manoah joining us. The other news coming out today is you had called out David Haye earlier, and it appears through a couple interviews earlier today that we're getting closer and closer to that next year. Is that true-ish?
Yeah. That's That's true stories.
Now, you obviously have said that you two have a thing, and that's why you chose him. But assuming you're able to do this, right? You went on Saturday night, and I believe the game plan you laid out earlier this afternoon was win on Saturday night, title fight before the end of the year, David Haye in 18. Would you like to live between those two worlds? Would you take another boxing match, or would then you just go back to the UFC and stay in the UFC?
I don't think there'll be anyone else in boxing that I'd want to fight. It won't be like I'll start in a boxing career. It'll be like a one-off, probably a one-off exhibition fight with David Haye. We match up so well. We've got a big, massive name. We're roughly the same size, roughly the same age. And I believe he's very, very beatable. And I believe that I can do it, which makes him really exciting. We're both on the same part of London. And, I think that's the perfect matchup for me. I don't think there's any other boxers out there who would match it. All the other heavyweights are a bit too big and that. And that's about it. I think he's the perfect candidate.
Awesome. Jimmy Manuwa joining us. The main event, of course, John Jones, Daniel Cormier. As you and I are speaking, it is Wednesday, so knock on wood, we should make it to the finish line, I hope. If we make it to the finish line, your thoughts on what happens on Saturday night?
For my fight?
No, I'm pretty much sure I know what you want your fight to do. What do you think is going to happen with Jones and Cormier?
I think Jones wins. Jones either stops him or Jones wins on point. I think he's got Cormier's number. I don't think Cormier has anything for him.
Would you be surprised if Cormier retired then on Saturday night?
If he lost? I don't know. Because he's already fought. I don't think he's got any interest in fighting anyone else. So if he loses, it's a big possibility, actually. I didn't really think about that.
Well,
it's a big possibility that he will retire.
You know, and I say that because you and he are similar in a very specific way. And in you and Gustafson are teammates. You've said you won't fight each other. He obviously doesn't want to fight Cain. And going up to heavyweight brings that possibility to fruition because it looks like Cain's going to fight Stipe. So it would seem to me there's not much left for him to do if he loses to Jones. I don't know. I guess I've been thinking about that all day and just wanted to get your take.
I didn't think about that, but it seems like a huge possibility because he's already been talking about retiring and stuff, and I've heard him say that I'm not relevant, and he's already beat Gustafsson, and he's already beat everyone else, so it's a big possibility.
So I guess we'll have to wait and see, my friend. Jimmy, I know you've done a ton of these, so I will not hold you any longer than I have to, dude, because I appreciate the time, and I know how draining this can be. So go relax, take some time, and I cannot wait to see this fight. Can't wait to see your hand raised and see what happens for the rest of the year. Jimmy Manuwa, have an awesome UFC 214. We look forward to talking to you again soon.
Thanks very much, guys. Thanks for having me, and thanks for all the support, and shout out to all the fans who support me. And that's it, man. Let's go and get this win on Saturday.
Take care, my friend.
Okay.
And there he goes, Jimmy Manuwa. He's taking on Volkan Oezdemir. Find out what Volkan really has. And to me, Ken, you know, like I was saying to Jimmy, it feels, especially at light heavyweight, there is a clear demarcation between...
I like that his name is Jimmy, but you call him Jimmy.
What should I call him?
It's fun.
Sir James?
I'm not really sure. I just like the way you say Jimmy. Like, Jimmy! You know what Jimmy does?
Little Jimmy and I were talking. No, but when you look at the light heavyweight...
Thanks, R-Truth.
Yeah, the light heavyweight division... you know, there's like that giant line that you can fight all of these guys and half of them you've never heard of if you're a casual fan. And then you get up against Jimmy Manuwa. When you get past Manuwa, while he was still there, it was Rumble. It was, DC, John Jones, and Gustafson. And those guys have been rotating around, and Glover Teixeira have all been rotating around for a while. And that five and below has just been kind of like a rotation of no one you've ever heard of because they've got to fill a roster of 10 guys. So it's like, I don't know, a guy named Volkan, right? This will be interesting to see where he is in the light heavyweight division because Jimmy, like I said, is a big step up for him. And I think a really, really tough fight.
Oh, for sure. I mean, that's a huge step up. And there's a reason he's there as the backup because he's a legit guy.
Yeah.
So it's also puts him you know, it puts him in position. Let's say he wins and John Jones wins. You could make that matchup next if you had to. I think, you know, you could make other money-making matchups, but if you had to make that next, that'd be a perfectly acceptable matchup. So you've got him on this card to do that. So it's going to be kind of cool to see him in this position on a card with, you know, basically the belt he would be fighting for on the line later in the card.
Absolutely. So UFC 214 this weekend, you can catch it on pay-per-view. We will be keeping you up to date on Twitter and Facebook at Wow Show. And we go to last week, UFC on Fox. Weidman and Gastelum, and this is the point where Ken gets to say, "I told you so." So I will give him the floor to say
what
that
do you mean,
I told you so.
What do you mean? Well, you thought I was insane by saying that he would be back into the title picture.
That
with
is
just
insane.
This win.
It's totally insane. Did you
he
watch
totally
that fight?
Is, though he totally is.
Did you watch that fight?
He's, watch what fight?
He's like lost the fight in the first round, and then somehow
carries on. Oh my god! Are you really going to be like Calvin Gastelum in the presser? So we don't care about how long rounds actually are. If everybody had more time, I mean, Durandamy would just keep beating the crap out of people. If she could just go forever.
She'd just poke people in the eyes forever. What I'm saying is I'm not somebody who's like forgets how long a round is, or that if there was 30 more seconds, although factually speaking, if that were
like
true,
that. I'm not this guy, but although
he's not wrong, if he had 30 more seconds, the fight would have been over. That said, I guess I just didn't see the two things I took away. One, the people that question Weidman's chin, I think have a legit bone to pick. And two, you know, while Gastelum has done some amazing things at 85, he is clearly undersized. And Weidman was able to do some things to him because he's undersized he would not be able to do to other people. And so in title contention, I guess, because everybody at 85 is in title contention, because we don't know when Bisping's coming back. But I didn't watch that fight and go, oh yeah, he could totally beat Yoel Romero, no problem.
But he doesn't have to beat Yoel
Romero.
No
problem.
He has to beat Michael Bisping at this point, and you can make that fight at this point. Okay, and here's the other thing. I want to talk about it because nobody lets it go at this point and what was happening at the end of the first round. And I've said this before about a dozen other things, whether it's holding the cage, whether it's having the hand down. The things that you do in a fight are predicated on how that fight rules are set up. Now, if you watch that, the blocks hit, the 10-second blocks hit, and that's when Kelvin's able to tag Weidman. Weidman has heard the blocks hit. He knows he doesn't have to do anything. Why would he do anything? So his reaction in that situation, I'm going to cover up and you're just going to hit my arms. That's all he had to do. He heard the blocks. He worked within the rules there. I don't know. Okay, maybe Kelvin 30 more seconds has him. I don't know if that's the case. Do you think if there's 30 more seconds that all Weidman's going to do is try to ride things out? I don't.
So
I didn't think he was that hurt.
Let's pause for a second. Where have you heard that he was just riding things out, just along for the ride? And I ask this specifically because I listened to Sarah's podcast this week where his words as the lead trainer over there was, we ran over there to figure out if he was still wobbly.
Okay, I get that, but
didn't go, hey, we've been practicing this thing where if you get tagged for 10 seconds, pretend you're a possum,
no.
Then sit on the stool and win the fight.
That's not what I'm saying, but I mean, he clearly heard the blocks, he got wobbled, he goes, okay, I don't have to make it that long, so he didn't have to exert himself in any strategic way at that point other than to cover up, and again, yeah, maybe he was wobbled to the point that he didn't realize that, I don't know, but then again, this ridiculousness of after the fight, Kelvin Gastelum, rather than just taking the L and moving along in his career, if I had 30 more seconds, that just sounded like it sounded bitter. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, but
if I had 30 more seconds.
But yeah. If he had 30 more seconds.
Oh, come on. Come on. And that's all I'm saying. The interesting, especially at that point in the fight, because you can argue at a lot of other points, fighters might lose track of time. I think they always kind of know where they are. They try to keep an eye on that clock. The coaches' corners are always yelling. I mean, literally, at that point, the blocks hit. You could hear the blocks. If you're a fighter, you know that what that means. And he got hit. He's like, okay, I only have 10 seconds. I got to get through. And again, I don't know if wobbly Chris Weidman even realized that. And I get it if Robbie Lawler says, yeah, we got to come over and see if he's still wobbly. Their fighter got tagged. He didn't look any worse for the wear, though, coming out for that second round at that point. So I didn't think it was a big deal until it seemed like everybody blew up on Twitter this past week and Kelvin in the post-fight pressers wanted 30 more seconds.
Well, throw the American flag over your shoulders and join the Chris Weidman fan club and
there you go.
Pretend that he should be in title contention because I do not see it.
You don't. Okay. Who is ahead of him? Yoel Romero, you would say, even though he came off a loss. Did you see the Tommy Tohold thing this week?
I haven't seen it. No.
Oh, God, that was hilarious, because basically he broke up the division and the fact that Yoel doesn't shut up, even though he just lost the fight where he could have won the belt. Obviously, Whitaker's got a belt, but he feels like everything hurts a little bit, so he can't fight. Bisping's there. Luke Rockhold, who is just sitting on the sidelines bitching about everybody, is just hanging out there. I mean, I think any of these guys in a title fight is fine, and that's why I said last week that Chris Weidman takes a win. He's back in the discussion because this is insanity right now. Your champion at the top hasn't been fighting for a while. He's calling out a guy who just lost a fight that was supposed to be for the interim middleweight championship. You've got Weidman who beat Anderson Silva and was really on a roll up until he just hit that skid over those three fights. So, yeah, you've got a lot of insanity there, but I think you've also got a lot of intrigue because you could take any of those dudes and match them up with the other dudes and call it a legit number one contenders fight at this point. You could even throw Gegard in there, even though he's gone. You could have thrown Gegard in there.
We can't do a number one contenders match in a division that has a champ and an interim champ. You cannot do that. There's no championship.
That's what the insanity is at this point.
There is no third championship.
What are you going to do? What are you going to do?
I don't know.
Eric just is entirely done with MMA at this point. I've never seen you that exasperated.
Like,
I'm just telling you
you look at the rankings, and Whitaker's obviously out for the next couple months because everything hurts, as you said. Bisping doesn't have a definitive date back, and he's dancing between Yoel and Weidman, which is interesting because Rockhold and
Bisping's looking at a couple different dates at the same time.
Yeah, based
directions.
All right. Yep. Got it. He's looking at two calendars. Can't decide which one he wants to go with. The Romero one or the Weidman one.
Get the one in the midst, Michael. The one in the midst.
And you've got Rockhold and Souza who are above Weidman. So,
what the hell is Rockhold doing, by the way?
I don't know.
We tried to figure this out last week, and I was looking things up, and like he just seems mad that he doesn't get any fights he wants. So he's just not fighting.
He's just really angry.
He kind of should be. He lost his belt, and then like just this Sony just threw a freaking M80 into the middle of the division and blew everything up, so it's like he's just trying to chug along and get back to his rematch, and all of a sudden he's like sixth in the division.
No, I mean, like, he's ranked third, but to your point, like, no one's talking about him. He's not locked up for anything. No one wants to put him against anybody, because to me that would be, if you want to make up the third belt at 85, that it's Weidman and Rockhold is what you do.
Yeah, exactly. And Luke Rock, I mean, he does have a point that maybe he should have gotten a rematch. He's already beaten Weidman. He obviously beat Bisping before. He beat Machida. So, I mean, I think what he was trying to do was play this very smartly and be that guy, look, I'll let things shake down and I'll get my rematch, of course. And then if GSP comes rolling into the, let's not forget, I'm going to reset again. I know this is the second time in the podcast because people forget GSP came in and kind of effed that division up for the better part of what, 4, 5, 6 months?
Yeah.
Because everybody was expecting him to come back in that division, which was kind of screwing everybody else up, trying to figure out where they landed at this point. And I'm just thinking, if you're Bellator, you got to love this 185 division, too. You just got Gegard. You got a couple guys who could be pissed.
Well, and you know, to that end, right, like Rockhold's one of those dudes. He better be locked up soon because you'll see him in Bellator because he's like, well, forget this.
Well, remember, Rockhold's one of those Strikeforce dudes.
Yeah.
That dude made his career and his name with Scott Coker. So let's not forget that. That, again, I don't want to have to get too much into this, but I mean, at a certain point, looking at these two companies and these divisions and who's there, you know, you and I are going to have to stay on top of this. Like, how many fights does he have left? How is he locked in? What's going on here? Luke Rockhold could be that kind of dude. Like, how many fights are left? Is because you know what? He could just walk over there and say, I want to fight Gegard, and I want to fight who else is in 185 over there? I'd have to look that up. But hell, I would assume that Gegard and Luke fight. That's your Bellator champion. Give them the belt. I don't care.
They have a champion over there that
I know they do. And I know we saw him a couple months ago. I remember they beat him. Hey, Eric, I know all the champs now. And I totally forgot all the champs by now. But that's just how my world works sometimes. I know I've seen them. You're looking them up?
I'm looking them up just because I feel
like. What Eric does is he looks things up, so he pretends he knows them after I've admitted I don't know what's going on. Eric's like, just to let you know, Ken. I'm letting you sink in your Google search.
Oh, there he goes. It's Carvalho is the champion. He beat Melvin Manuf on April 8th is his last day.
Oh, so we didn't see that one. That was the one championship fight that wasn't on the card.
No, you saw the yeah, what did we see?
What do you mean, what did we see?
We saw the Primus fight is what we saw with the Chandler and the
Vanderlei.
And Vader and yeah, all that stuff. So anyway, that's your champ that one of those two guys actually has to beat in order to be the 185 champion. Okay, so UFC 214 is this weekend. Follow along on Twitter and Facebook, and trust me, since for the first time in a long time, we're actually going to be watching this together. You're probably going to want to follow along because it could get crazy. So have an awesome weekend. We will talk to you
soon. Facebook Live?
Yeah, we can do a Facebook Live. Let's do that.
Let's get your kids on there. They're looking for some airtime, it sounds like.
Yeah, like at 1 in the morning when the main event is on, we'll get them on. All right. With that, we'll let you go. Thanks, Evelyn. It's Way of the Warrior.
You want to make her picks real quick?
It's your MMA show.
Who you got, Ev?